Hi, Heated Rivalry fans. You're listening to Believe in Anything, a podcast where we talk all things Heated Rivalry and sports impact through conversations with other fans and creatives. Hi, I'm Lee.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Danielle. If it's your first time listening, welcome. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. We're so happy you're here.
Please make sure you're subscribed, leave us a review, and say hi on Instagram, Threads, and YouTube. We're at Believe in Anything Pod. Today, we are talking to Maxine, who you may know on Threads as Maxine NYC. She is an amazing essayist and writer who has covered a bunch of different topics related to Heated Rivalry. So we were excited to get the opportunity to talk with her and discuss some of her writing. So more to come there, but we have to talk about Heated Rivalry highlights of the week.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yes. Who wants to go first?
I can go first this time. I don't think I have ever gone first, and I don't know what that is about, but I'd really like to shout out the other Heated Rivalry podcasts that exist in our universe, because they're all very good and they're all very different. And if you're listening to one, you'll probably want to listen to them all. So these are the ones I have written down that are fully focused on Heated Rivalries. Pit Crew, it's about the pit, but they do have their own little series called The Puck Crew. Loon Call, Everyone Deserves Sunshine, Heated Rivalry, Tonsil Hockey, and Since Rookie Season are all really incredible. All ones I've listened to. If I'm forgetting any, let me know. But shout out to the people who do this, because it is intimidating and nerve-wracking. And it's also just really fun to get to listen to all of your work. And yeah, so shout out to them.
Yay, community.
Yay, community.
I can talk my Heated Rivalry highlight of the week, which
Please
is
do.
I have finally officially finished the Game Changers series. I've taken my time with it. And I only read Heated Rivalry Long Game before the show came out, and I've been making my way through the books since then. And I officially finished, I did them out of order. I finished Common Goal like 2 days ago, and I enjoyed it very much. And I've had a great time with the series, and it took everything within my power not to just go back and immediately reread Heated Rivalry and then the Long Game. I'm pacing myself.
Do you feel like you could do a ranking right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just put you on the spot.
Let's hear
it. It's going to be the Long Game, the Long Game, Heated Rivalry.
Okay.
Role Model?
Mm-hmm.
Blinking on the other books. actually, you know what? Ranking is hard, now that you say that. Okay. Heated Rivalry, Long Game.
You started off so confident.
Long Game, Heated Rivalry. Sorry, it's a lot of books. And I've been reading them for like, since November? It's been a long time. The Long Game, Heated Rivalry, then Role Model, then Game Changer. I don't know where I rank Tough Guy and Common Goal. Like, they're kind of at the same place for me.
Okay.
I think.
That's okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for that. How many times have you reread The Long Game?
Oh, I've only read it once.
Oh.
I've, like, gone back and read bits and pieces, but yeah, I've only read it full once. I didn't want to, like, just go into rereads before I finished the series. I was, like, determined to finish the series. I fought very hard with myself. And I'm proud of myself. Not because
now you've
reading
seen
is a chore.
Ilya through the whole series.
Yeah, and how he pops in and out.
Yeah, it's my favorite part. Like, visibly, like, audibly, I'm like, tah! Every time he shows up on a page. Even he shows up, like, towards the end of he's so funny.
He's hilarious.
So I've really enjoyed that. That's my highlight. I'm proud of myself. Again, not because they're like a burden to read or anything like that, but because I feel like I've been not in a slump, because I've definitely read books, but I've done a lot of rereading. Like,
it's an accomplishment.
Thanks. Yeah. I think so. So Common Goal was like book 11 of the year or something like that.
My God, really? I guess it is. For some reason in my mind, it's like January 5th.
Like, oh.
She's like, what the hell?
I'm like, what do you mean?
I need
like
to
I said, a lot of rereads, though.
I need to catch stuff.
I'm only on 9.
I don't think I've read a single book.
And that's okay.
I keep reading fanfic. Which,
that counts in my head.
I know I can't track it on Goodreads, though.
I know you can't track it on Goodreads, but is there a way to track? There's no place to track that stuff, huh?
No, but there really should be. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start. I think we're on to something. Idea.
Wait, cut this. Nobody can take this.
No one. This is copyrighted.
This is me with the theater app that I thought I invented in my head.
I'm sure it actually exists.
What theater app did you think you invented?
You can download this app called Theater without the E at the end. And people post last minute. You can like set notifications, price caps or ranges for whatever show is out. And it's not always only Broadway, off Broadway. I've seen people do it for some like concerts and stuff too. Mainly theater though, obviously. Good name of the app. Anyways, I thought in my head I had invented that and I was like, man, I really got to capitalize on this. And then I found out about this app and I was like, it's so upsetting when someone already has the idea that you had.
And but at so least it exists already for you to use.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I've used it many times. So I'm grateful.
Period.
Love that.
Sorry for changing the subject there.
You're educating the masses, Lee. It's okay. My highlight, I've changed it since I told you what it was going to be.
Oh.
Ooh. Keep on your toes. Mine is Cozy Mood on Threads posted. I sent this to you guys in our group chat earlier. She posted a close-up of Ilya's fluttering pulse.
Oh, yeah, and I said
that
enough.
Is not my highlight.
My response to that was enough.
No, it's crazy. Yes. It's really enough crazy.
I don't know what scene this is in. I need a rewatch.
Where is it? Where did you see it? Oh, it's in our
Instagram.
Instagram group chat.
Where is it?
Where is it? Oh, yes. Yes. I can tell by the sheets.
So can I have a second highlight?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My second highlight is the I just realized how cheesy it's going to be for me to say it out loud. When you have to order something at a restaurant that's named something super silly and you're like, I don't want to order it now. Like, don't embarrass me. Anyway, the tag on AO3 called BAMF Shane Hollander, which we all know what BAMF stands for if you don't Google it. But there's only, I think I checked and there was maybe 200 using that tag. Or honestly, maybe even like 60. I don't remember. I should have gotten a better gauge on it. But the point is there wasn't enough. And there needs to be more of that because I think sometimes people write Shane too delicate. And we forget
that
man is a hockey player.
He is that guy.
Of course, he's so sweet and he is Bambi. But he is also a badass who fights for his man. So I would like to see that reflected in fan fiction. Please and thank you.
BAMF. I literally saw a TikTok this week of a girl being like, I feel like y'all are forgetting who Shane Hollander is. Like, the fact that, like, let us remind you, he is that guy. Like, he is the guy.
Yeah.
Lest you forget.
Ilya like, reminds him who he is in the trophy room. So.
Yeah, but I think, especially because of the show and the way they're portrayed, I think people are like, Ilya is that guy. But he bagged a baddie with Shane.
Yeah, like, they're both baddies recognize baddies. So let's not always just be like bashful. Like
No.
Bashful.
He contains multitudes.
He's a freak. I mean, we need to show you Margot's edit again. Like, that man's a freak.
A big old freak.
I love when he punches people in fanfic on the ice.
That's you know, I've not read any fanfic.
Me either.
I need to get on it.
Well, I have so many for you, so don't you worry. I have so many
and
for
I'm
you.
Send That's them really in good our mix. Group chat. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Is that it? Did we do it? Did we do the thing?
I think so. Those are our highlights. I'm thinking about BAMF. Shane Hollander. What? Without further ado, here is our conversation with Maxine.
Today, we're speaking with someone whose heated rivalry takes are so good, they've left me genuinely speechless. She's an incredible writer and essayist, a must-follow on HR Threads, and we cannot be more excited to yap about heated rivalry with the wonderful Maxine. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes. Thanks so much for inviting me. Super excited for our conversation today.
Us too.
Yes, I'll start. So we obviously have to ask, how were you introduced to Heated Rivalry? Had you read the books before, or was the show your first introduction?
Yeah, the show was actually my introduction to the series. I'm someone who I love the romance genre in general, and particularly love sports romance. So I think it was just kind of a natural gravitation for me to be, you know, super interested in it. So started with the show. Got hooked immediately. So I was looking back to see, when did I start? I was like, maybe it was in December. I was like, no, Maxine. It was like the day it came out. You were obsessed. So started with those first two episodes. And in the time that it took for us to get to episode three, I read the first book. So it read Heated Rivalry. And it was great to be able to see how those first two episodes were executed. And then it was, you know, amazing to kind of know what was coming, but really just be able to see how they're going to do it for the remainder of the show.
Yeah, they did a great job. So have you been in fandom spaces before? Is Heated Rivalry your first kind of dive into fandom spaces?
Sure. So I have been in fandom spaces, I would say like analog and digital. So like I'm definitely, you know, Spice Girls, Backstreet Boys, Eden's crush, you know, like all of that stuff was absolutely me, you know, as a younger girl, and really just spent the 3 months in 2025 talking about Sinners in basically this exact same way. So if you talk to folks on Blue Sky, like they know me for that, for like that conversation and kind of talking about Sinners and predicting all 16 Oscars, like all of that stuff is what I was doing kind of earlier in the year. And then saw that there was a big film community on Threads. And so started talking about film there. And then I realized, oh, there are a lot of romance authors who are here. And so it gave me a great opportunity to just kind of get looped in with you know, folks I was interested in hearing from. And then here we get, you know, a romance adaptation, you know, for us to get obsessed with. So it wasn't my first, but it's been really exciting to see this one, like, at the very beginning. I love that opportunity to see something as it's entering the zeitgeist. And this is absolutely that. And so it's been really cool.
Yeah, it's been so cool to be part of the community from the start. And I feel like we've kind of taken over Threads as just being Heated Rivalry.
It's the Heated Rivalry.
Yeah, we have.
Have you have you read all the books at this point?
So still working through them. I have read Heated Rivalry and The Long Game. So excited to see where, you know, our boy Ilya pops up all over. So definitely going to be going back and hearing those. And really, for me, it's because I want to see how Jacob, and I know he's planning to work with a co-writer for season two, is like thinking about, again, like executing these things. I'm someone who originally thought, in order for me to get to like this place of analysis and critique with you all kind of like engaging with me, I was like, well, maybe I'll have to write a romance novel first, and then, you know, maybe I'll have to work on a screenplay, you know, as an adaptation to then be able to like talk about it and get a community of folks that were interested to hear about my thoughts on the art. And so this has, one, shown us like Jacob literally jumped from the finding the book to like making this. And then I also just jumped from like, oh, maybe folks might want to hear what I'm saying, to all the way at the end, which is where, you know, I wanted to be. So I think that piece has been really cool too, to get the source material, to see the passion and the commitment to understanding why it's valuable. And then, you know, being able to portray that on screen is why, you know, this particular fandom, I think, has been so exciting for me, because it's that combination of narrative and technical, which is why we're all so hooked on it. Because it's like we learn more things creatively, and then we learn more things narratively, and we just want more, you know? So it's been exciting again to like be part of the fandom, to get that information, but to also like work through things with one another, because that's really what we're doing, you know, that's you're getting that like classroom analysis as you're scrolling.
Yeah, definitely. You kind of just touched on it, that you love romance, and obviously wanted to share your thoughts. So you wrote an incredible essay called Romance is the Reason, answering the question that we like to ask all our guests, which is, why do you think Heated Rivalry has resonated so widely? What first inspired you to write this piece?
So really, frustration.
Yeah.
And I think many of us within I think many of us within the romance space are constantly frustrated by the reaction to it. Because if you think, like, we live in a capitalist society, the first thing that people are talking about is going to be money. So if that were the case, like, everyone should really be talking about romance, you know, in terms of it holding up publishing consistently. And so I think the frustration there, the confusion about, like, why would this be popular? It's like, well, 5 years ago, I don't know, this show called Bridgerton came out around the same time. It was really popular. It's like, wow, we're all confused, you know? And even the timing was basically the same, you know? So there's no real reason for there to be this confusion. And for me, I also wanted someone to really lay out the conventions so that, you know, folks who are already in the space that are knowledgeable could say like, yes, this is exactly where it was getting it right. But also folks who are new to the genre could understand like why it was functioning in the way it's supposed to, right? Like the reason, like literally the title is why I said it, because I'm like, that's the reason. Like the reason it's always worked is the reason it's working again, you know? And so wanting people to really understand that. And the other piece is I was waiting to read it. Yeah. I was like hoping somebody else would write it. And then I was like, oh, well, I guess I have to write it now. I was like, I want to read it. So somebody needs to do it. And then I realized like I had to be the one to do it. So wanted to really like put the genre through its paces, see again, like what works, see where the key things were, and then where, you know, Tierney did them. Right. He literally just said, like, this is what's in the book. I just did what's in the book. Right. And so being able to lay it out for folks so they could use it as a resource. Right. Whether it's folks who, again, are outside of the space and just need to know, like, what are the genre conventions? Like, what is supposed to happen here? Mm. And also the folks within the genre could say, like, somebody gets it. You know, like someone cares enough to detail it and show why these books are so popular. It shows why people continue to write them. And so I really just poured kind of all of that, like the interest in the topic and the frustration into the essay itself.
Yeah, this I feel like there was a lot of people that were like, I can't believe it ended happily. And we're just like, welcome to romance. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah, it's like that's the key convention and that's why we're all here, you know? And so like the most amount of confusion being like the most conventional piece of romance. It was like, right. I feel like somebody has to say something, you know, like we all know what we're doing here. And also the idea that like a happy ending is really difficult to write. And this is an entire genre where that's the main thing. Like everybody knows that's where every story is going. And wanting to like show how difficult that is to make it satisfying when we all know, again, like that's where we're going. And it's not, it's dissimilar to mystery in that way, because it's not like, ooh, and there's a, you know, crimes and other things going on, right? This is like we're telling stories of people coming together. And that could be unsatisfying, right? We've seen it be unsatisfying in other stories and romance hinges on it being satisfying, right? Like that is a core piece of it, despite the fact that we know it's coming. And so wanting to really help folks see, like, if you want these stories, they exist, right? I didn't want people to feel like this is the only, you know, like this is fantastic, but it's not the only life-changing romance you can read or you can watch. And so I also wanted people to know that, like, what you're seeing is part of it, right? Like there are millions of stories, right? All of these crazy books in the background over here, this is all romance, right? All of that stuff in the back there. So it's like, you know, like there are, if you want like happily ever after, like welcome to the genre, you know, like that's what you're going to get.
I feel like also recently there's been misinformation about the romance genre, like things that aren't romance have been labeled as romance. I'm thinking in particular, I didn't read the book, but I watched My Oxford Year. And I feel like Netflix was really pushing that as a romance. Does not really have a happy ending. Romeo and Juliet is sometimes labeled as a romance rather than a tragedy. Why do you think?
Right. I was like,
Do you think that has something to do with maybe why people are confused about those initial elements of a romance?
Yes, I think they are. But I also think in the labeling of that, it's people recognizing the power of romance, right? And without feeling like they need to say that,
right?
Because if there are all these stories that aren't really that, but you're like, but we need the audience.
Yeah.
Like, we need the romance lovers, you know, to be here and to bolster this. So I love paying attention to things like that because it just tells me that romance is important, right? They know it's important, even if they're not saying it. And there are all these ways that, you know, you can cut it while you're pulling in that audience, you're also saying like, well, you know, what you like isn't that important, which is why I think it's key for us to talk about those genre conventions, talk about the things that we need to see and what would make these stories romance stories so that we can help people understand, right? And come to appreciate them,
Yeah.
right? I think something that we're all experiencing even if we knew this was a romance story, is letting go of a lot of what we've seen in previous stories. And I think we're just doing that at different levels, right? And we've recognized like how much people need to do that by them gravitating towards this story and feeling like it's completely different than something they've ever experienced. It's like, wow, more of you need to experience this, right? To deal with the trauma that we're all collectively dealing with, whether it is like from our real life experiences or just what we've seen on television. It's like, we need to release some of that, right? We need to be able to figure out problem solving within a genre that tells us everything's going to be okay, right? And kind of deal with that and experience that and feel it. And so that's also what the reality is letting me see is like people want, they're craving romance stories. The disappointment comes from it not being that, even if they don't know what the what romance is, you know? And so the defining of it and helping people understand and letting people know it's here and not just here, it's monumental and it's consistently monumental, I think is so important. And so I love that the show is also making us do that, right? It is saying like the reason it's working is because the genre works. So like, let's talk about it because everyone's loving it and it's exactly what you get in a whole genre.
Yeah. There's a reason why romance is like the most popular genre because everyone wants the happy ending.
Yeah, you know, and so like lean into that. And that's what we're getting from this. The first thing people are saying are like, oh, you know, that's what I want. It's the wish fulfillment. And it's like, yeah, again, all the books, all the books in here are leading to that, you know? And so if you want that, it's there, right? And so I also don't want people to feel like, and now we need to create a new genre of these types of stories. It's like, no.
Yeah.
We've been here for a couple hundred years. So let's keep it going.
Yeah, definitely. You talked about in this essay how Jacob honored the source material, but was there a change from the book to the show that you felt strengthened it even more?
Absolutely. So there are many. I think I would be remiss if I didn't start with Svetlana because I think that change there, I think, adds an immense amount of depth to Ivya's character. It plants her as like along with Elena and along with Rose, you know, it really plants them as like fundamental pieces of the story. And so I love that. And I also love in episode 5, we get the confrontation between Ilya and Alexei. And I think getting that before the monologue changes the way that we are approaching that entire monologue. Because even I remember seeing a clip of like Connor doing the ending, like those last two lines of the monologue, like as they were, him and Hudson were reading the book. And really that entire scene in the book is about that love confession because we don't really know, you know, the other stuff that's being said, right? We are supposed to care about it because there's something that he's sharing that he's not sharing with Chain. But in the show, we're getting like his life story, you know, we're getting him like really bearing himself and telling us this like immensely painful story, right? The confession is absolutely part, and that's part of the pain, right? Of what he's sharing. But if we didn't have that scene with Alexei and with Svetlana and with Ilya, like right before that, like all the stuff with the brother, we would get it, but we wouldn't like get it, you know? And so there were some changes where I love that it just added like a gut level emotion to the story. And it just carried into, you know, something else, right? And so something that we were already excited for, we were already, for those of us who had read the book, you know, already prepared for what we were going to hear at the end of that. There is no way I could have predicted what would have come right before that. Mm-hmm. And like the impact and the weight of that and knowing that that's what he was also carrying. Like he went through that experience and then spoke to Chain. It's not just like, oh, we saw that on TV, you know, and like that scene happened and then this one. It's like, no, literally he like walked from that place to where we see him, right? In the tunnel to travel there, having experienced that. And so I loved, you know, that change. I think a lot of the stuff to just add depth. I think what we got with Chain and Yuna, I think shifting her character too, I think adds that pressure and, you know, provides us with just an understanding of the weight that's there, you know, thinking of like the model minority and just being in a space that's predominantly white and what that experience is like, for someone who's operating at a high level as an athlete and feeling like you can't risk your entire career. So I think shifting that again, like those heightened stakes are really what Jacob did, right? Like understanding, needing to add a little bit of depth with pain, or needing to add a little bit of depth with pressure for each of them. And so I really liked what that ended up doing and meaning for their story, because they needed to see that and still choose one another, mm-hmm. right? So adding that depth there, I think made it more satisfying, because you knew what they were risking. Even if they haven't, you know, come out yet, we know what they're risking in just admitting things to one another.
Yeah, that, and it makes me so interested too in how the long game is going to play out as well in season two, because a lot of that book is, you know, inner monologues, inner thoughts. So how Jacob is going to kind of make that cinematically come to light is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that, because I think there's, and I know we'll probably chat about music, but there's like room for music to be able to use it in that way. But I also think there's, you know, like Rachel has a great deal of white space in that book, right? Like you mentioned with internal dialogue, but there's also like room to stretch and shrink, like timing and things like that. And we know that Jacob already, you know, did that with season one. And so I'm interested to see kind of like what he does in terms of shifting that around. And like you said, like giving us access to that. And by creating these stronger women, you also create opportunities to both like share information and withhold information, which I love, right? Because you present and you strengthen Svetlana and you make her a confidant, you know, if he pulls back, we're going to feel that way more, right? Because we know what she means to him, right? And you make them friends from childhood. Again, like if he pulls back, we're going to feel that. We know he's going to feel that. And seeing, you know, what's happening with Rose, there's an opportunity for us to get information that we know Ilya won't get, right? Or it could be the same thing. It could be that withholding, right? Because of the pressure that we know is going to come on their relationship and just like the stakes in the world. So I think there's the text is malleable enough, and I love that the show shows like you can be true to the text, like to the core of it, but you can also see and take advantage of and maximize those opportunities where film allows you to do some creative stuff. But also like strong writers can see where that white space is and go, okay, like I can fill things in a little bit here in a way that I think is going to be satisfying for folks to see it.
Jacob is kind of like a genius when it comes to adaptations.
Yeah. I mean, this is insane. Like if I told people, even a couple months ago, I was like, if I could imagine like a shortcut way to do what I wanted to do, he just did it.
Yeah.
So that's why it was crazy for me to just like see it, to be like, I read a book. Let me just make a thing. Let's see if it's good. And everyone's like, I'm obsessed with this and will be for the rest of my life,
exactly.
You know? And all he did was like, everyone likes the book. I'm just going to do what the book does, you know? And helping people see just the value in that, because that only, again, like strengthens the power of the book. Right. Like the book is already like that. And even in my essay, I wrote about like that cinematic quality of romance. So like some of the blocking and so much of romance is like, where are your hands and where are we in a room and how are we moving through space? And like, well, that's what blocking is. You know what I mean? Like that's literally what you're doing. And so to have the book already start to do some of that work for you, you can write in, you know, directions for folks, like where they need to move, where they need to be. And that also feels consistent with the book. It's crazy, right? For you to be blocking things and for that to also make it feel like you're in the book is incredible. But so many romance books are already like that.
Yeah.
Right. And so getting someone who could see that and say, oh, great. Like, I don't even have to write out how to block the scene because it's already in here. Let me just, you know, put that in my scripts. Right. That's not something I need to fully think about. I can think about the lighting in the space. I can think about the costume. I can think about the production design, you know, and some other things, because even the blocking, it feels like part of the source material, I think, is incredible. And knowing that these books already exist like that also makes it frustrating, because it's like, well, why aren't other people doing that? You know, like if we know it can be like this and you can care about it enough and be committed to it, of course we're, you know, those of us who read in the genre are like, well, what's going on? You know, like what do other people feel like they need to bring to adaptation if the thing that we're loving right now is a pure adaptation, right, of what we're seeing? And so I also love that it's making us just look at adaptation more rigorously, because it's provided an example where it's like, nope, I just liked it. I gave them what they like.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to change it. Yeah.
Everyone liked it. You know, yeah. And if you do, you can do it in a way that like puts it in the stratosphere, basically, right? You can add what you're good at, right? You can add the film pieces of that, right? And you can care about that as much as you care about the story it is that you're telling, versus like, oh, I need to completely change the story and maybe I'll do a little bit with some of the technical stuff. Right. Like that is not what Jacob did at all. Right. He said, like, this is the story. I want to tell this story and I'm going to use every tool in my toolkit to be able to do that. Right. To give it the gravitas that it deserves and not say like I need to put my spin on it. And then I'm just a movie guy. So it's whatever, you know, it's like, no, you need to equally care about the narrative and the technical and recognize that you can, especially folks who do write and direct, you know, where you can fix or where you can, you know, expand, right? Or where you can adjust in order for it to be even more incredible but still feel true to the original story. Do those things. But everything else, focus on what you focus on. Pick your cameras. Pick your lenses. Figure out your lighting. Talk to who's doing, you know, hair and makeup, right? Like, that's the stuff you're good at, right? It's not rewriting an entire story and paying less attention to that stuff, because that's also part of what's not resonating with us with a lot of new stories. It's that we're feeling like the stories themselves are not centering the romance, and we're also feeling that lack of interest in what's happening technically. Right. It's just like, it's a romance. You'll like it. Here we go. And it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It's like, do you like romance? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah. Cause then like, to your point, they feel like they can skimp out on maybe like the dialogue or the extras, like to make it actually high value, high quality.
Yeah. It's like, yes. Where can we cut corners? Right. Or where can we not take the audience seriously? Right. Where can we just say they'll like it because we called it romance? And like that will draw them in, right? And we recognize that we're hungry for these stories, right? We are going to pay attention, but like we are analytical people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we are. That's what this is teaching us. Like we're deeply analytical about our romance stories. And so after this, it's basically like, well, it's heat or rivalry and then everything afterwards, right? Like this changes the way that we approach stories, the way that we see other creatives approach stories, and not necessarily that we need every adaptation to be exactly the way the book is, but we need there to be a respect for the genre and for the audience, right? And the knowledge that if you do this in a way that takes them seriously, they're going to understand the journey that you're trying to take them on. Because I don't want creatives to feel like, well, every adaptation I'm doing just has to be like part and parcel exactly what the book says. Because there's some instances where it's like, no, we actually do need you to do a little a little adjusting, a little massaging, you know, of stuff. But we do want you to take us seriously, like know the stories that we like and why we like them, and find ways to creatively portray that, you know, for us.
Something that Heated Rivalry does a little different in terms of narrative is sometimes we're used to the conventional slow burn romance, especially I'm thinking of a lot of romance movies that have come out recently. And it leads up to a big kiss at the end. And that is kind of the payoff. But that's not necessarily truthful to real life or how intimacy works in real life. And Heated Rivalry and kind of how Ilya and Shane have a lot of their story through their intimate scenes. So I feel like also sometimes we've seen through media or through some viewers or readers that they tend to find that less meaningful or
mm-hmm.
or they treat it differently. I guess, why do you think that is? And is there room for viewers' mindset to expand there?
Sure. So, I mean, I'm someone who fully believes like sex moves the plot,
yeah.
like in our real lives, you know? And so the idea that it doesn't do that in a story like seems pretty nonsensical to me. I'm like, well, we're humans. Like we know that, you know, like it's going to change something. Either like something's being said, something's not being said, right? It's awkward. It's not awkward. Whatever's happening, you're learning information. So I like the idea that both, you know, like Rachel Reed's source material is kind of leaning on that as the start. It also makes sense. Like they're teenagers, they're athletes, right? There are things that we like, it's like, this just makes sense. Like, yes, people are going to start sleeping together and then figure out what's going on after that.
Right.
So for me, I like that it just presents that as the way they begin, right? There's not really a lot of like exposition at all. It's a very economical, you know, set of scripts that we're dealing with here, but there's no like pathologizing of them sleeping together, right? It's not like, oh, a thing like we need to stop because like we shouldn't be, you know, it's, there's none of that. It's like, we like this, like, let's keep doing it. And oh no, we've now pivoted into like something that we don't understand, but it's not a like denial of like sex as like a real beginning of a partnership. And I just love that we get that, right? That we are able to see it, you know, in our adulthood, that young people who will, you know, grow to be able to see that will have that as an example and know, like, it's okay. You know, like, we get, along with Ilya and Svetlana, we get these presentations of sex as just like a thing that happens, which is literally what it is, right? For a lot of people, it is an activity that you do. And sometimes it means a whole lot, either at the beginning or the whole time. And sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just a thing that people do, right? And we see it in, again, like Ilya and Svetlana having sexual chemistry, but they're not interested in one another romantically in that way. And we see, right, that intense sexual chemistry that can turn into like, what are these feelings? And that is true for a lot of people. And we don't really hear those kinds of stories. I think I spoke about earlier this week of that. You know, we get a lot of stories that are like, I'm in love with the person that I'm sleeping with, right? And where the focus is so much on that love. Like, yes, I was sleeping with them, but now I love them. And that's like the main thing that we're getting. And with Shannon and Ilya, we get like, I'm sleeping with the person I'm in love with, yeah, right? Like, that is the part that's hot for them, mm-hmm, right? Is that they want each other and then they realize like, oh, there's a love thing here. This is crazy, right? And but it never denigrates like them wanting one another, the desire that's there. And that's the other piece that I think it's important for us to see is that there are some people where it's desire at the center and the love is around that. And we're very used to being presented with either stories where it's like love is basically everything, and then the desire shows up a little bit at the end, or you have people trying to like squeeze the love into the center of desire while there's love on the outside. It's like, no, sometimes people could just be like, I'm really into you, like a lot, a lot, a lot, right? And that turns into something else. And we don't have to make it like the something else before, right? Because it wasn't that. It was that they wanted one another badly enough to just keep doing this over an extensive period of time. And that is just how they begin, right? It's not something that we need to be like, well, and nope, they were having fun, yeah, in bed a lot. You know, like that's just what it was, you know? And it turned into something else, which is why that you get the like, how do we let this happen? And like, mm-hmm, all of that stuff. But it's like, that starts from desire. Even as they're doing, like what they're doing as they say that, like that's how it happened, literally, right? And finding value in those types of partnerships and relationships and letting people know, like, you can have the hots for the person that you're in love with. And it's why I'm so excited for season two, because I think it has an opportunity to be really radical in that sense of us getting an established couple with like it, with an intense level of desire. Like, we don't really see that. Right. We see what we just saw, where it's like people coming together, and we know our, like, this version is way hotter the whole time. But usually we don't see like a couple who's like trying to hook up all over the place. It's like, that's what we're going to get, you know, like, I'm like, strap in, everybody, like that is what we're preparing for. And we haven't really seen that. So I'm excited for us to be able to see that, because the desire is still going to be there. And I feel very particular about it not disappearing and just becoming like a little sweet love thing, because that's usually what we get.
Exactly.
Like, no, sometimes you have two athletes. Yeah. Hello? Hello.
Who are competitive.
Does anyone know Rebecca? Yeah. Like, I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm basically Svetlana. Two of my best friends are former NFL players, right? And so I'm like, yeah, do you know these people? And there's a lot of testosterone. There's a lot of adrenaline. There's a lot of, you know, they're running around all the time. And these are two men who know what their schedules are, because yeah, they're on the same, like, even if it's their team, they're in the same league. So they're generally same schedules. They understand life. They don't have to explain the biggest parts of who they are. And now they're in love with each other. Hello?
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. And even though there's a lot happening in the long game, like emotionally, they're intimate scenes are still like super playful, to your point. They still show a lot of desire, and there's an emphasis there where, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, they're established, like it's all going to be like super romantic and slow, and it's like it doesn't have to follow that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because I was like, and that's a very easy trap to fall into, right? Because it's like, oh, we're so sweet. Like now, you know, the I love yous have come, and now everything, you know, everything is making love. And I'm like, what are we talking about? They're doing crazy stuff. That's not what's happening.
No, there's a gladiator costume, and that's okay.
I was like, there's extended drives. You know what I mean? Like there's stuff that's going on. And I don't want people to feel like we're just going to get the like super sweet stuff, because it's like that's not what's coming. And if we do get that, again, I think it's going to be like something that's really revolutionary, because it's also going to change like the way people are seeing the literal relationships that they're in. Right. We know that this season is already starting to have people like reckon with the partnerships that they're in right now or want to be in. And I think seeing that in an established couple, I think will change a lot of things, because we literally just don't get those stories definitely not on the screen, you know. And so I'm excited to be able to get it.
And has heated rivalry changed the way you are looking at the romance genre?
Sure. I don't know that it is going to change it massively, mainly because I think I see like what Jacob has done is what I feel like romance is capable of. And so I think I'm excited that like I love the word gravitas. Like that is what I think it's bringing, right? And the ability for visual media to be able to do that in a different way than the written word. But what I want to see is just the written word on the screen, right? Like that is what I want to see. And so I'm excited about approaching the romance genre in that way. And now being able to continue to see that cinematic quality. I'm someone who, when I read, I already start to see like what the movie is and what I think the music's going to be and all of the blocking already. So I'm just excited for the adaptations that we will get. And I'm excited for the folks who are going to start writing.
Yeah.
Just coming out of this, you know, we'll use this as an opportunity to tell their stories or any stories that they're really interested in within the genre. I love art that begets art. You know, and the most transformational art does that, where it makes you, right, somebody has created something so incredible that you feel like you need to create. Mm-hmm. And we are in a space where this is doing that, right, in all different ways. Just the existence, right, of what you all are doing here, right? And I think it's incredible that art is able to do that. And so when I'm approaching the romance genre now, it's just with a renewed excitement and a renewed interest. And I love that it just gives me an opportunity to analyze things. And if the stories that we're getting are really good, I know that I will be able to do exactly this. So that's really what my hope is to just give me more reasons to just keep yapping on the internet and you know, writing essays and talking about stories, because again, like that's what the best art does.
Yep. I love that. And we want to talk about your analysis of the soundtrack, the original soundtrack.
Yeah.
Because again, when you're reading, you can kind of hear music that you would hope to see, but something that the show does really well are these needle drop moments. So what made you want to focus on the music of Heated Rivalry specifically?
Sure. So I love music in general, and in particularly love the use of music in movies, but I would say visual media in general. It's something I'm just naturally drawn to. I listen to a lot of original music as well as like music with lyrics. So I'm a big original score listener and original soundtrack listener. And I've always been attracted to music with no lyrics, because it's providing you with an opportunity to like fill things in, but somebody's giving you like a sense of where you should be going, right, in terms of what the composer is doing. And so I knew immediately upon watching the show, I was like, oh, I have to dig into the music, because there's just a lot of, the first time I was watching it, I don't know, you know, what's coming, especially with the first episode, but I definitely don't know what's coming in terms of the music, right? I'm like, I have no idea. They could pull out something crazy in every episode, but there was just so much there, right, in terms of what was being used for like needle drop moments. So us being able to get internal dialogue through the use of songs with lyrics, but then also in combination with a really strong original score that is doing a lot in terms of like themes. And I love paying attention to separate moments that have the same music, So because that's all choice, right? Mm-hmm. And visual media, like everything you're seeing, somebody's decided, right? Even if it's serendipitous or accidental, somebody in the edit had to say, like, let's go with this particular take. So I'm always approaching art in that way, which means everything is a choice, right? When we hear silence, when we hear music with lyrics, when we hear music without it, all of that had to be decided. And so the music is just a layer in a language that I know not everyone is attuned to, but it is absolutely one where, like, I just operate at that frequency. And so whenever I'm able to, like, hear things, spot things, notice things, I love sharing that, because the music, especially in this, was telling a story, like, way earlier, you know, than I think folks who definitely didn't read the book,
right,
wouldn't have been able to predict, right? And maybe even more than Shane and Ilya, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the music is like, hey, I don't know if you know.
Hey, you're in love.
Like, this is what's going on, right? And so it's like, hey, like, really early, you know? And so I love that music can do that, right? Where it can tell you a thing once you're done, and you can go back and be like, whoa. Like, wait a minute, you know, like, I didn't realize that. And I love it for romance in particular. So, like, Bridgerton is actually a great example of this. Chris Bowers has done the original score for all four seasons. And starting with that second one, already started using the themes and the leitmotifs from the first season in the second season, right? And continues that throughout. And so that means you're able to tell, like, a story of siblings. And they're, like, moments crossing over one another. But if you're not at all attuned to that, it's fine. Like, the music is beautiful. But if you are, you're like, whoa, why am I hearing Simon and Daphne's music? And why am I hearing Kate and Anthony's music here? And why am I hearing, you know, all of that? It's, again, that language. And if you can speak it, it adds a whole other layer to the story. And I am fortunate to be one of those people who can speak it. So for me, it's like, well, I have to say these things because I'm like, can you not hear this? You know? Yeah. Anyone get to hear these things? And because I can, I'm like, well, let me just tell you what I'm hearing.
No, and I mean, I definitely learned a lot from what you wrote, because you think you're aware of these things, but I also, just looking at the titles of the songs and like how Ilya and Shane's, like, love, like, the love theme that they have, it has kind of a different title than the others in terms of, like, utilizing the word soul over and over again. Like you said, if you want to, there's extra layers there for viewers to look into that adds so much to the viewing experience, which I think, especially as we're waiting for more content, another season, it's like that can improve the experience so much. So we're very lucky that you speak the language and are willing to share that with us. Do you have a favorite music moment in the show that stands out to you in particular?
Yeah, I mean, if I think of like my ultimate favorite, would probably be "Let's Make a Deal," that's playing over the bathroom kiss. Because I said, like, if I had to pick, like, a 5 second moment, it would be that, right? Like, I already know that because it's emotional. It is like, you can feel, like, the sexual tension. So I would probably pick that as my favorite. But I think of, like, I started already being like, what is going on? And I bring up 1-2-2-1 all the time because, like, the music that's playing there, I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
It's, like, very romantic, right? That it's playing. And that was the first, that's Heartbeat One, right? So the first of the suite. And when I was listening, in the first breakdown that I did before we knew anything about the music, besides just, like, what we were hearing, I separated that from the love theme. Because I was like, this feels like they're, like, I called it, like, they're falling, or, like, their feelings theme. And then I was like, okay, the love theme is definitely what's at the end in terms of two souls. And then to get the music and be like, yep, it's like, here's the soul suite and here's the heartbeat suite. So, like, my ability, again, to just hear the difference, I was like, and then that sounded from 1-2-2-1 sounded like them texting one another. Right. And that's Heartbeat Two. Right. And so being able to, like, hear those things and the texting was scored like intimacy scenes. Right. And so for me, I was like, oh, that's crazy. Right. I was like, that's insane. But it also is, like, telling us things that they're falling for one another. Right. Like, it is equating them on some level enough for all of the collaborators to have said, like, yep, this is the music I want over this, and this is the music I want over that, right? And so I always think about choice. Why would you put the same music that's here, right? And we hear another example is, like, Common Goal.
Yeah.
We hear that in the gym, And then we hear that during the press conference, right? And so for you, for me, I'm like, oh, why would they equate those things, right? Like, why would they equate with them, like, those moments where they're, but literally the title tells you that, right? Like, the one goal is, like, whatever they were doing in the gym, right? And the other goal is, like, literally what they're doing, right, as part of this press conference, like, what they're doing as athletes, how they're meeting each other where they are, because that's literally what happens in the gym, right? And so these, I end up loving so many musical moments because of what they mean, you know, like, where that music is placed, what is the story that's being told, the connections that are there, you know, the couch after the tuna melt and the face off before the accident. Like, that music is the same. What is that telling us? Like, this deeply intimate scene that they're having, and this moment that they're having in the face off before the game, right? There's again commonality there, right? That's telling us something, the way that they feel there. It is an opportunity for, like, their lust to be there, but and their aggression, their competition, right? All of that is the same, and that's being told to us there solely through music. Because if you don't know that that's the same thing, you're just like, oh, that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, that music's great. But if you do hear it, you're like, wait a minute, you know, like, where did I hear that before? Like, why am I hearing this again? And so it just makes, you know, moments mean a lot.
Yeah.
And so I generally end up picking moments where there's no lyrics, because it's things that are holding up the scene, right? Where you're doing just enough to, like, make the scene incredible. Like, yes, the kiss in the bathroom would have been amazing, but, like, what the music is doing there is insane, right? And is really, like, making that moment. And so I love those opportunities where the music is just, like, softly in the background, or sometimes loudly in the background, but it's not saying anything.
Yeah.
Right? It means you have to participate, right, in what's going on, right? Moonlight Sonata being in the background, if you know, you know. Right? Mm-hmm. If you don't, it sounds great. But if you do, you want to cry just because it's Moonlight Sonata, right? And then you want to cry because of what Ilya is saying.
Yeah.
And so I love those moments where it's letting whatever you see speak, but it's just making it a little louder. Is really what I like about original music in particular.
And a lot of the soundtrack is instrumental, but, you know, one scene and one moment that does have kind of some lyrics included is their suck up when it's you.
Yeah.
So what's your take on that? Why do you think the lyrics kind of come in there?
So I'm still, like, thinking through my hypothesis about the music, because I really, especially after revisiting all of the music and the series itself, is, like, I really feel this, like, Ilya's music is the score, and Shane's music is the soundtrack. And even when I think of, like, who they are as people, it makes sense. If it's, like, what the inner dialogue of Ilya being, like, less words and more just, like, depth of feeling. But also, like, if you go back and look at the music, there's so many scenes that are going on with what Ilya and Sasha, Ilya and Svetlana, Ilya talking to his brother. These are just, I can name the tracks, right? These are tracks with score in the background of them. And when we think about Shane, we're thinking about, like, Sea Lion, and we're thinking about My Moon, My Man, and we're thinking, like, things with lyrics, even when he's with his parents. And those are needle drop moments that happen there. And it makes sense to me that, like, Shane's internal dialogue is, like, nonstop speaking.
Yeah.
Right? Because he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Right? I was like, he doesn't say much. So inside, it's like everything's going on. And so I love that we get the only track on the original soundtrack with lyrics, right? So a completely original song is when they're together in this first moment, right? Because we are getting, again, that depth of emotion from Ilya, but we're also getting the lyrics, right? We're also getting those words. And if I think of, like, the moment where Ilya asks, "Worth the wait," right? And Shane responds with a kiss. And then the lyric is, "It's you," as that's happening. Right. So for me, I'm like, I don't know if they did that. However, Maxine's going to say they did that, because, like, it's like, yeah, the lyrics are Shane, you know, and the music, though, is Ilya.
Oh, I love it. And it also made me think of, too, the call and, I think you called it call and response kisses. I might be getting that wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
So like that moment. And then also you mentioned the moment in the bathroom too, where it's like some people may call it deflecting, but really it's an answer to questions just through a kiss, which I love that. It's a beautiful way to think of it too. Of like, no, they're.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're saying what they think.
Yeah. And when I was like, they're literally saying, you know, what they think. And they respond almost immediately. Like if I just think of like, even the way that it was choreographed, right? That like Shane asked that question in the bathroom and it's like basically Ilya lunging at him, right? To do that in order to answer it. And like Ilya's looking up at him and says, you know, worth the wait. And it's an immediate response. Like they respond to one another immediately, even if they're not saying, you know, what folks hope that they would. Like they're still young at that point. So I'm like, the idea that they would just be like, oh yeah, I think I'm in love with you, you know, is crazy. But it's like, they're not saying that, but they respond, right? And they respond with what they need, right? And you know, Shane is very tender in that moment in the bathroom and Ilya responds with like desire and desperation and yearning. And like Ilya is like, not jokingly, but like a little jokingly asking that question, you know, like we've waited this long. And Shane immediately responds with tenderness, with like a real reaction to that, right? And I love that they get that, because that is what they want, right? Shane wants to know that like Ilya wants him badly, and Ilya wants to know that like he's cared for, right? If I'm able to be with you, I will be safe. Like you will care for me. And they give each other that, you know, and those are the two kisses we get, right? And along with the stairwell kiss, right? But more, and that feels like more deflection than the other two.
Right.
Right. And that's quiet, you know, so there's a whole thing to say about that, you know, like there is no background, anything, you know, as they're talking there. And we get the deflection and the silence, you know, so that's also the piece why I love talking about like the use of sound, because what makes visual media distinctive is that, right? It is the image and the sound. So we have to think about the music, what kind of music we get, what it's telling us. And when do we not get music, right? All of those things are important because all of those had to be chosen, right? Even things going from, I think in like the cottage or before that, when they're in the car, like the music going from what we are hearing as an audience to like what's being played in the car, right? So we know like this is the kind of music Shane likes and likes to play in the car. You know what I mean? So there are things that we learn just from that change. And there are lots of people who won't hear that, right? Who won't know the difference there or recognize that. But again, when you do, it lets you in, right? It helps you understand characters a little bit more and the connections between them.
It's also just making me think how much more impressive it is considering the turnaround between filming and actually releasing it. All of these layers, like how quickly they put it all together is super impressive.
Yeah. And also with the music, because music is generally the last thing that you're working on. And so reading, you know, Peter talking about the experience and him saying like, oh yeah, I thought I would have had like a month or maybe a little bit more to be able to get the music out to the people. It's like, nope. It's like, we got to do it now. You know, like everybody wants it now. So even just that and having to come up with titles and all of that, you know, just like really swiftly to put those things together to be ready for us. But also even during the production, right, for him to have started with a set of music with the way he thought it was going to go based on what he'd read, and then to see the footage and go, actually, scrap all of that. I need to start over because this is not at all what I expected in the most incredible way, is also amazing, right? Because he was operating within a really short timeline and it ended up getting even shorter, right? But for us to have gotten what we got, you know, from that, I love, you know, the serendipity in those types of moments, right? Like it's like he needed to be bowled over by, you know, what he saw in order for us to be bowled over by what we're seeing and what he's hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so fun. Music is so intuitive, like you were saying, which is basically, it's basically music. It tells you how to feel, even if you don't realize that the music is telling you how you're supposed to be feeling. It's its own kind of language. And I think the joy of that is also the more you watch something or the more we get to sit with these, you know, six episodes of TV, the more things we as an audience can pick up on, little things, micro moments, et cetera. And you talk about these like emotional details in your essay. I was wondering, do you have maybe a favorite from the first season as far as micro moments or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many. I think here, I'll bring up Holonov because I think the, like the needle drop at compatible and then switching to kind of what we get and the joy of that. And also just like what we know, it's the couple title, you know? And so being able to get that and the music and have it be this really like happy moment and moment that's full of chemistry and intensity. And also to cross that with what's happening in the pool, I think is incredible. Mm-hmm. I remember I was reading it and I'm like, I love these two moments so much. And I was like, how are they going to do this? Because I'm like, all the stuff at the pool is great. And all the stuff on the ice is great. I was like, how are they going to do it? Jacob Tierney's like, hold my beer. I'm going to make it amazing. And I'm going to cross cut it, you know, and I'm going to add this incredible music and you know, make it feel like the intimacy scene that we get right in the episode is something that I think I always think about because it's like their greatest joy is that, right, is getting to play with one another. And it's something that we all like think and want for them. You know, even as they're doing it, even before we see them, you know, scoring, they're just happy together and being able to do what they love together. And it's something that we want for their future. So for us to be able to see a little bit of that in the show, especially coming off the bar, that's so intense. It's relief, but it's also joy at the same time. You're like, oh, I love what was happening. It was a vibe, but I also like my throat's dry because you all look like you're going to, you know, sleep with one another in the bar in front of everyone. And then you go like into this amazing, happy, you know, like joyous moments, you know, that they have together. So I think that's a big one for me because it's what we want for them. And we get to see it and they get to feel that before we even get confessions or anything like that. To get to see a little glimpse of that, it's just magical.
Yeah. And even so, looking forward to season two, are there any like moments or tropes or visuals that you in particular are like really excited to see?
Yeah, I mean, I think just at the very beginning, all the stuff at the club I'm interested in. I think there's an opportunity for us to really dive into Shane and Ilya's POV in a way that we haven't seen before, because I think they're like, we're getting more yearning and angst, I feel like, in this than we are in the first, you know, where it's people who are together but want to be together. And I don't know if I'm ready for it. That's what I'm telling everyone. It's like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. Because that's what it's going to be of, like, people who you know how great they are together, right? But they don't get to do that all the time. And what that means. So I think that's definitely something that I'm excited for. I also know that it's going to hurt to hear, you know, them say that they're really good at like not looking like they're in love with each other, right? I think it is like that piece of it is massively important for us to like really feel how sad that is, especially because we know how long it's been, right? And you know, having to go through that journey of time where you're like, oh my God, years are passing, like what is this? And to know that in that time where they were you know, figuring out their emotions, they also just got really great at like not showing any of them, you know, in public, I think is heartbreaking, but something that we need to feel in order for the stakes to feel really real. So that's the stuff I'm excited for, is like the ramping up of the angst and also the ramping up of the pressures from outside. Because I think there's an opportunity for us to do just a bit more of that, like team reactions and the league and you know, ramifications of choices, because we need to feel the weight that's on Shane, right? And we also need to know that Ilya at least feels safe enough to start to address what's really happening to him, but also he's just extremely avoidant. Right. And so we're going to need to see that in practice. We've seen it with them like trying or just having to be apart for a while. But we know that they want to be together all the time. And these things are going to be trying to keep them apart from one another more than anything else. And so I'm excited for all of that, because I think it's going to be hard. And again, we know it has to end happy. And we know it will, right? But we know that we're going to be put through the paces in order to get there. And I'm excited for that, because we know what they're like together. So, like, no matter what, it's going to be great. That's how I feel. It's like, it's going to be hot all the time, because, like, they already said, I love you. You know what I mean? Even if it's stressful, they already said that part.
Right.
And we know that part makes everything more intense for them. So we get, like, just that level of intensity as a baseline, you know? So I think that that piece is it's going to be fun.
Agreed. I think we're all, I don't know if we're all ready for that, but I'm definitely excited for it.
Right, going on like a, ideal.
Yeah, I think yeah. going from like a bird's eye view a bit, speaking of Heated Rivalry as kind of a whole, how would you say Heated Rivalry has inspired you in your own life?
Ooh, I mean, I think it, like, yes, it's scary, but you're brave is something that we all, you know, needed mm-hmm. to hear. Mm-hmm. And especially for me, even doing things like this, you know, is confronting my own, you know, fear of being perceived. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm just saying stuff. And I'm like, wow, everybody's responding. That's crazy. Yeah. You know, like, I just thought I said a thing. And so just like being willing to like come and speak with you all and kind of expand myself outside of, you know, the platform and be able to have these live conversations and know that I have, you know, valuable things to say about the art that we're all in love with, I think has been the biggest inspiration for me. But it's also, you know, like I was chatting with you all before we got started is like, this is what I wanted to be doing, right? I want to be, you know, in a space where I'm doing analysis of the music, of the narrative, of, you know, the technical pieces of visual media. And it's just been like, here you go, now you get to do it. Yeah. So like, let's go and do it, you know? And so that piece, I think, has been really inspiring to want to have been, you know, in this spot potentially after doing a lot of work and to be able to get here through a path of basically no resistance has been really incredible and something that, you know, I'm going to take with me going forward because I was like, well, I need to build an audience before I can do the blah, blah, blah. And I've just been doing the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And,
the audience is
you
there.
You know, getting
yeah.
an audience.
And
exactly.
The audience
so
is there.
Like that piece. Yeah. yeah. And so like that piece has been definitely inspiring for me. And you all reading the stuff I write is crazy. I don't know if that will ever, you know, stop being crazy. And so I'm trying to just continue doing that. And even last year, I wrote an essay about bravery and said, you know, it'll probably take me a long time to feel brave. But while I'm on my way there, I will be. Yeah. Right. And so some of it is just that is like doing brave things, even if you don't feel brave. And so it's inspired me to just continue doing that.
I love that. My wallpaper is literally a picture of Shane that says you're brave. So I I feel that deeply.
Yes.
You kind of already touched on it. I think it's part of this, how it's inspired you. But I think so much of what Heated Rivalry has brought to all of us is a bit of community, which I think is beautiful. And, you know, part of this fandom, we spoke on fandoms earlier. But what would you maybe say is your favorite part or favorite thing about being in this fandom in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I would say our curiosity for character, I think more than anything, has been really encouraging. Like I, you know, I'm someone when I was like 10, 11, was like, yeah, I'm going to be an English professor. And what I tell folks now is like, I'm not an English professor,
right.
but it's like I'm doing a lot of that work, right? A lot of that pouring over material and seeing what we can find, what we can learn, what we can take, you know, as lessons for ourselves. And I think that's the piece that I've appreciated so much about the fandom is that we are curious because we want to care more, right? We want to care for these people more deeply and it's helping us learn to care for one another more deeply. And that's, you know, what I want us to continue doing going forward. But I also think like romance is the genre for that, right? Along with, mm-hmm. You know, us being able to read these stories, we're reading about friendships and bonds that are being built, you know, surrounding these couples and partners that we're reading about. And so for us to just get guidance, get advice, right? Seeing Rose and seeing Svetlana and seeing Elena, being able to see like what can we learn from them, right? To help us become, you know, allies for one another, right? And what can we learn from Shane and Ilya learning how to communicate with one another? How can we do that? And we're already starting to see how people are doing those things, right? Looking for ways to change themselves for the better. And so for me, that the curiosity that we've brought and the care that we've brought for these characters and the crew and everyone, yeah. You know, cast, all of these folks, I think is the part that keeps me excited and keeps me want to you know, continuing to talk and share, because everyone's ready and excited to be like, what new thing have you uncovered, you know, today? And if you've uncovered something we all know, amazing. We all love that, you know, and let's keep it going. And what I also think is we're still so early into the fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we're not even a full 3 months in, right? And even though everyone's, you know, folks are like, is it too late? Right. And I'm like, what are we talking about?
We're here, yeah.
It hasn't even been 100 days. Like, let's cool it a little bit, you know? And so, but I do want us to understand that we have to talk about it in order for it to continue, right? In order for it to last, we have to feel comfortable just talking about it in perpetuity, right? For it to get to that point where it's 20 years in the future and we're still talking about it. So that's the other piece, is I want to continue to encourage us to keep talking, right? Even if it feels like, oh no, we've exhausted it. It's like, no, we won't, because there are people who are writing articles about it right now. There are people who will be teaching classes about it. They will continue to reckon with it. And so we can too. And so that's the piece where it's like, I want the fandom to continue. So don't feel like it just has to be this hyperfixation that exists for this period of time. It's like, it can be just something that extends for a while. And it's more than okay for it to be that, because it is a generational piece of art, you know, like it's built for us to talk about forever. So we can do that.
Agreed. It's part of the magic, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like here now, right? We can't go back.
Yeah, right.
Right. We can't. So
there's like life before and life after. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, we're in the after, you know, like we are in that spot. And particularly as viewers and lovers of romance, like there's no way for us to be like, oh, we just didn't see all the kissing that we saw in that season of television.
Right. Right.
There's no way, right, that we can pretend that we didn't see that. So it's just like, keep it going, you know, like keep talking, keep that curiosity going, allow yourself to express whatever it is, whether it comes out in songs or paintings or essays or whatever, you know, encouraging people to keep it going, because we want to be talking about it for a long time. And so that means we got to talk about it, especially right now, you know, like we have to cement it right now versus later.
And the art that people are making because of it are then getting new viewers, and other countries are finally getting to watch it for the first time. So it's new people come to Threads. We're there talking about
every day, you know. They're like, what's going on? I just saw the show. Like, what's happening? Who's talking about what? You know, every day. Yeah. So it's like, we'll have to keep it going. We're still in it. We're still basking in the glow, right, of it being released. And so I'm excited. I always think about like, what's the first 5 years going to be? And I spent really the first half of 2025 being like, when we're 5 years out of Sinners, what is that going to be like? You know, and what will that mean? What will we see come out of that? And it's the same way I felt about Heat of Rivalry. It's like, in 5 years, like, what is this going to do? Because it's already changing a lot of things now. So like, give it time, and like, be okay giving it time, even though we exist, you know, in a time where that feels cringy to like something for more than 5 seconds. Am I doing too much? It's like, no, you're not. No.
You like something.
You're
that's
alive,
great.
And you love it.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. You like it. It's like, just be okay. Yeah.
Agreed. And I think, speaking on, again, how it's inspired so many people, and there's so many different art forms that have come through this, or people are exploring because of this. I think one of those is fanfic. And you give great fanfic recommendations on Threads. We all follow you on there.
Thank you so much.
So what's one that you read recently that you loved or would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're all in love with Play Hard by every. Yes, I was like, I think if we've like made it through Heat of Rivalry and through really like the full book series, I know we're all like, well, that's canon now. You know, for season three, we already have things. We already know what it's going to be. But I actually just finished one that's called, I think, Death and Taxes and Shane Hollander.
Love that name.
Which I really loved. Yes, it's great. And they're much older.
Oh,
so they're in like their late 40s and end up coming back together. And it's great. And it just, I think the last chapter was just like yesterday. But love that. It's very, it literally just feels like them, but they're older. And I always love just an opportunity to like become more yourself, or, you know, have life change you in particular ways. And Ilya's a parent, right? And Shane is like navigating, you know, his life in the NHL. And so, but again, they're like grown people, mm-hmm. you know, who've lived very different lives. But they still, like when they come together, it feels like what we just saw in the show. And so really love that one. So highly recommend it. I think it's 12 chapters. And it's great.
Is it finished?
And I was like, why am I crying at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Always. Yeah, it's done. Okay, good.
Yeah. It's 12 chapters. I was like, oh, look, it's me crying at 1 a.m. Right. Nice.
Okay, right.
But I really love, but that means they nailed it. Right? And there's a part mm-hmm. of it where I'm like, oh, I want this in season two. So yeah, highly, highly recommend. Of course, Play Hard, but definitely Death and Taxes and Shane Hollander.
Amazing. Gamely? Should we do a game?
Should we? Yeah. We'll jump into a fun little this or that speed round.
Yes.
Just say what speaks true to your heart.
I know.
There's no wrong answers.
Let's see. Exactly.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Ginger ale or a Blue Moon over Brooklyn smoothie?
Ginger ale.
Ilya's tuna melt or Shane's burgers?
Oh. Burgers.
Shane's loon call or Ilya's Jim Woo?
Loon call.
Hang out with Hayden or Yuna?
Ooh, Yuna.
Mm. Ilya's okay or Shane's really?
Okay.
Yes.
Stairwell kiss or your boyfriend's here kiss?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Your boyfriend's here.
Team Europe or Team North America?
Team Europe.
Penthouse 1 or room 1410?
Ooh, this is hard. Because I'm like, a penthouse is chaotic.
Yeah.
But actually, no, I'll do 1410.
Yeah. Kingfisher Bar or Straw Plus Berry?
Kingfisher.
Be a fun place to hang.
It'd be a fun mm-hmm. place to hang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Party and I make drinks, so I'm like, yeah.
Oh, amazing. party with Svetlana or get dinner with Elena?
Oh, this might be the hardest one. No, I'll party with.
Yeah.
Okay, fun. We always joke. We're like, get dinner and then party?
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I don't know. Both? I don't know. Elena likes to party. I'm like,
yeah,
she can come
too.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, she could come too. I know. I love them so much. I love them both so much. Yeah.
Agreed. All the things she said or I'll believe in anything?
Who? All the things she said.
In between seasons, a blooper reel or standalone episode?
Blooper reel.
Yeah, me too.
Canada fleece or banana socks?
Canada fleece.
We all want the Canada fleece.
I know, I'm like, should we change this question?
No one has ever
picked. He looks so soft and cozy.
I know.
It's like he looks so cozy in it.
I'll take both. Like I said.
Yeah. We're both at the same time.
We're both at the same time. Last one is sunset scene or sunrise scene?
Ooh, sunset.
Okay, love.
Yeah, the thumbs.
The thumbs
yeah,
are
yeah,
so
yeah.
Cute.
The thumbs
are
so sweet.
Yeah.
Well, truly, thank you so much for your time. And we're so appreciative.
Yes, of course. This is great.
And
this is wonderful.
Yeah, we could talk to you for hours. So we just really appreciate your time. And truly, like, it's amazing how much, like, your analyses and commentary really, like, deepen the experience for so many people, which is so lovely and so wonderful. And we're just, yeah, we're very thankful for that. And so thankful you took the time. And I can't wait to hear about all the other stops on your press tour. I can't wait to listen to those.
Yes, I'm so, and thank you to you all really for reading them. You know, Threads is really just a space for me to kind of get things out. And so whenever I'm able to uncover or reveal things for folks, I'm always excited. Like I'm always more, that's why I'm like, whenever stuff catches fire, I'm like, no one's more surprised than me. So, so I really I love it. I want to thank you all and say, please keep, you know, responding and engaging. Cause I'll definitely keep discovering things and sharing them with you
amazing.
All.
Well, thank you so much.
Amazing.
Yay.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That conversation with Maxine made me really want to go rewatch, reheat, as the kids say. I don't know about you guys, but I've been rewatching like kind of slowly, just kind of as needed, like little pieces here and there, because I don't want to have too much of a good thing, kind of.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a thing. I haven't watched it in like a week, and so right. It's time for a rewatch.
I haven't watched it in a while. I need to go back to it.
So now knowing what Maxine was telling us, especially the music, I really want to like take that into account while watching. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. And also, I want to be someone who finds something that no one else has found.
I want to be the one.
I want to be a detective. I won't be, but I'm gonna be watching, and I'm gonna find something, and everyone's gonna be like, "We talked about that 2 months ago," or they're gonna be like, "That doesn't make any sense." So keep your eyes peeled for that. But one thing before we go, I want to call out Connor's 26th birthday fundraiser on justgiving.com. We will link to it. As of now, it's raised almost $18,000, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's for the National Center for LGBTQ Rights. And it's still going on. I don't know who's running this, actually. Oh, it's Connor Story. Connor Story Updates is running this.
Amazing.
Thanks so much for listening and hanging out with us. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you are following along.
Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and say hi on social media. See you next season.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.